from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Bouncing ball toward third. Paredes will glove it. Long throw to first, and it's a wild throw. A run will score. Runners will advance to second and third. Paredes made an ill-advised throw. He was aggressive, thinking about making the play, but he really had no chance to get anybody. He tried to throw to first, hurried the throw, and made a wild throw way over the head of Bush. And now it's a 4-2 ball game, and runners at second and third with two down.
Yeah, just trying to make a play, and then probably a ball he should have eaten. But there's no out there.
There's no out there. There's no out possible there. Just eat that. Put it in your back pocket. It's Craig Counsell talking about Isak Paredes. Tonight at 5:35 will be Cubs pregame right here on The Score, as we are the only local broadcast of that game tonight. Pregame coverage at 5:35, first pitch at 6:10 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. Also this Tuesday, from 2 to 6, join me and Danny Parkins, Parkins and Spiegel, at The Wall in the Marcus Gurney Cinema to register to win prizes and tickets and enjoy specials on food and beverages all day. Then at 8 p.m., enjoy the premiere of Hard Knocks on The Wall's big screen. Admission is always free at The Wall. Very much looking forward to being out there and hanging out with you all. It is Matt Spiegel here with you on 670 The Score. Got a couple of phone lines open if you want to hop in at 312-644-6767. We will talk to Eno Saris from The Athletic at some point this hour and Team of the Moment in just a little bit. This is Stan in Bellwood on 670 The Score. What's up, Stan? How are you?
Hello. Great show, as usual.
Thank you,
today,
sir.
Your show today, speaks is a throwback to the 90s. I really enjoy listening to it. This is The Score glory days. Terrific rant by your prior caller.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, people are angry and pissed yeah. off and beside themselves and trying to figure out what is what and where to assign blame for the White Sox mess and then the Cubs thing. You know, it's interesting. We had a caller earlier comparing the Cubs and the Sox in terms of the misery because the Cubs were expected to be good, you know? So, it's interesting. But go ahead. What you got, Stan?
Okay. Well, the White Sox didn't get to where they are right now in a vacuum. There's so many low points on their scorecard that, you know, I don't know where to begin. But from resuscitating Tony La Russa, to firing Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams, but retaining Pedro Grifol, and for some reason, the stubborn, steadfast refusal to fire him today, even though they're on the verge of being the worst team in MLB history. Jerry Reinsdorf laughing out loud at the notion of pursuing Shohei Ohtani. They're a mess over the last 5 years. But the low point for me, where nothing is more emblematic of why they are where they are today, was hearing that Chris Getz was reticent about trading Eric Fetty, of all people, within the division, a team that's 27-86, was concerned about him coming back to bite them in the rear end, you know, sometime during the road. Their situation is just hopeless. and helpless. The management there is incompetent, amateurish. That type of mindset really tells you more about where they are and how they got here than anything else, that they're concerned about that. I'm just at the end of the road here now. So that is so flabbergasting and gobsmacking. I can't believe it.
Yeah, man. Stan, it's amazing. Eric Fetty, great scouting find. Good job. Great contract. You trade for whatever you can get, but you don't want to do it within the division. So do you take a lesser package from the Dodgers in a three-way deal just because you don't feel like dealing him to the Twins? He's under contract for next year. Are you going to be viable against the Twins next year? And it came out they didn't want to trade Crochet within the division either. You think the Twins are going to pay Garrett Crochet? Nobody pays anybody in this division. Nobody. They're not going to extend Garrett Crochet. So even if he's really good for this year and next year and the year after, you just don't feel like looking at it. When you face them, you don't face them as many times as you used to. What a weird, weird, embarrassing bit of logic to allow to rule you at the deadline. Out of touch. This is Nancy in Urbana on 670 The Score. What's up, Nancy?
Hi, Matt. Just want to say always enjoy your show. I'm hanging clothes on the line as we speak, enjoying outside. Got the radio on. But I wanted to bring up that PCA Nico Horner play again.
Yes, please.
I do appreciate that you said it was more nuanced and not as binary as it seemed to be, but as people were talking about it. But I have to admit, I side more with what Cliff Floyd had to say about it. And what I kind of worry about is PCA kind of losing what his specialness about, his specialness is his speed. And I don't want them to tame that from him because I'm afraid he might kind of lose that. And I think Cliff sort of mentioned that. He's so special out there.
Mm-hmm.
Let him make those plays. And so I just wonder what you had to say about that.
Yeah, you definitely want PCA to be aggressive and to get everything that he can get. And that's why I do validate that. And I appreciated Cliff sharing that from the outfielder's perspective. So and Nico said that towards the end of his comments. He's like, I'm going to trust Pete again. Next time, I'm going to trust Pete. And Pete will have to learn from this. If you're going to call anyone off, you have to make the play. You're going to call him off, then you got to go barreling in there. Even if you're a little afraid you might run into him, if you called him off, if you called him off, then you go ahead and you get in there. And you make sure you make that play. You can't call it off if you end up sliding. Probably shouldn't have called him off, but we know why, because Nico had smiled earlier, acknowledging what it was, So there were issues. There were issues going on. But you've got to be careful not to call someone off if you can't always get there. So thanks for the call, Nancy. I love the image of you hanging clothes on the line. All right. Eno Saris is going to join us in about 10 minutes. But before we do that, let's do Team of the Moment as we do every Sunday right here on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Here he comes, Spencer Schwellenbach, making his 11th big league start, coming off arguably his best of the season. Perfect. And he gets Gordon looking. Another one.
Great pitch.
Gordon looking. Now Rivera, 4 strikeouts through 8 hitters for Schwellenbach. And now the bottom of the order, the catcher, Ali Sanchez. There's the shortstop in Schwellenbach. Cat-like reflexes. Looked like you, Glav.
Yeah, it did.
Schwellenbach in search of a 10th strikeout. He got it. Striking out Sanchez. 7 strong for Schwellenbach. The rookie continues to excel.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
Look, the Atlanta Braves have been lurking all season long. Over 500. but kind of forgotten amidst the Phillies' incredible start. And this is in part due now to the Phillies having lost 13 of their last 17. But the Braves are only 5 games back. And that kid that you heard the highlights of, Spencer Schwellenbach, is a story, man. Spencer Schwellenbach was a shortstop at Nebraska. He didn't pitch in college until his final season when he became a closer. So he was shortstop and closer. And then, once the Braves got him, he's become a starting pitcher. He has thrown a total of 206 innings in college, the minors, and the majors. And Spencer Schwellenbach, as a starter right now for a team that's been without Spencer Strider, obviously, and without Max Fried, and without Renato Lopez, Spencer Schwellenbach, over his last 5 starts, 33 innings, a 2.45 ERA, 38 strikeouts, and 1 walk. 1 walk. Dude struck out 10 and got the win last time. He struck out 11 the time before that. He now has a 6-pitch mix and has had a dominant start to his big league career. The Braves have found a freaking another one, people. They're amazing. And he says that every day in the dugout, quote, it's something else, as he learns from Max Fried, from Charlie Morton, who is one of the great underrated OGs in terms of a teacher on a starting pitching staff in a dugout in all of baseball, and Chris Sale. So Fried, Morton, and Sale teaching Spencer Schwellenbach the ways. And oh, by the way, the Braves have won 6 of 8. It was 6 of 7 before last night. They lost, and I don't care. They're still team of the moment. And oh, by the way, at the deadline, their outfield has been terrible offensively since Ronald Acuna got hurt, Michael Harris got hurt, Jared Kelenic hasn't been getting it done. So they went and traded for Jorge Soler.
Solar power.
And now they've got Jorge Soler and Marcelo Ozuna, essentially 2 DHs, but Soler can play right field and is going to play right field with that big, big arm. And he's got 2 more years left on his deal. He signed a 3-year deal with the Giants, and the Braves picked up all of it, not just a rental. And they know that Jorge can deliver, as he did for them when they won the World Series with him part of their trade acquisitions. They've now homered in 9 straight games. They lead the majors with 23 home runs over that 9-game stint. I don't know if they're going to come back and win that division, but I know they'll make the playoffs, and they will be a terror and a threat again. And if you didn't know about them, Spencer Schwellenbach is the man of the moment on the team of the moment, the Atlanta Braves.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Callers, hang on. Going to talk to Eno Saris first. He's a great, great guest. And then after that, we will round out the show with your calls before we get out of here at noon. It's Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel, on 670 The Score.
You should know his name.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
I can't think straight. Help me now before it's too late. Now what do I care? Cause we're going nowhere. Going nowhere.
Tapper in front of the plate. It's going to be flexed into Robinson. Fires it into right field.
This has to be better coordination. And the reason is, you got Salvi Perez running down the line. He can't run. You have all kinds of time. Both guys went out to try to get the baseball, and there was some confusion.
Sticking out the back, that is Garcia. That'll drop in left field. He is digging for 2. And now as you see that ball get by, he's going to third.
Andrew gets to it quickly, but that throw is off the mark. It's a double E7.
There's a chopper to third. And Young cannot make the play, so everybody's safe. Ground ball. Misplayed by DeYoung. Both runs will score.
Oh, a nightmare inning for Paul DeYoung.
Man, for the musical inspiration to our friend Eno Saris from The Athletic, who joins us right now on Circus Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. Going nowhere indeed, Eno. Our producer spent, 3 hours looking through embarrassing White Sox highlights. Those were the those were the choices to go along with.
I did want to compliment the work there. That was A-plus production.
I was
enjoying myself.
Oh, goodness. Everybody knows that Andrew Benintendi's arm is a problem. You know, that's like, it's somewhere down the list of the issues. You know, it's pretty damn far down the list. I don't know that I've ever seen anything like this, you know, and I don't know how closely you've paid attention. And Lord knows we've dissected it enough, but this thing from top to bottom is remarkably dysfunctional and broken, and I don't know if Sox fans see a way out of this anytime soon.
Yeah, it is. You know, the kindest thing that I want to start. I want to start with the kindest thing.
Okay.
The kindest thing that you can say about their situation right now is that they were in such a bad place that it will take time to get out of that place. And so it was never going to be something that was going to change in 1 year. And so, you know, no matter what you think of the new regime, there has to be some grace in terms of like, well, okay, you know, at least you made some trades and got some young guys in here. And in fact, you know, one of the things I did like about the Kopech and Fetty trade was that they got one of the guys, at least, was younger. They got some upside that was further away. You know, the Marlins have taken the other approach where they've gotten a lot of guys who were already 23, 24, 25, and closer to the big leagues, more like Trey Sweeney. But they also got the other guy, so there was some balance there. Because this is going to take a couple of years, so they might as well take some younger guys and take some shots at upside. But yeah, it doesn't look good. There's nothing I can point to that looks good right now.
Yeah, no, it's really hideous. But I'd love to talk about some other things with you around the game, but that have some Cubs and Sox tangential subject matter to it. Michael Kopech, I don't trust him mentally. Frankly, I don't trust him to maintain a fix if a fix comes, because I've lived through him getting fixed and then being bad again and then getting fixed and being bad again. But that may be tested, because it seems the Dodgers have gotten him righted a little bit. You've always loved the stuff, haven't you?
I've always loved the stuff. And I think that the easiest way forward, especially within a season, is just a pitch mix change. And when I was looking at the numbers and they say, oh, look, he switched to his cutter from his slider, I'm like, oh, you know, that makes some sense, because he could command his cutter better than his slider. And his main missing point really is command.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's not like asking him to raise or lower his arm slot or, you know, develop a good changeup or get command of something that he never had command of before. This is just a simple thing like, hey, let's use that pitch instead of this pitch.
Yep.
And I think that could be the way out for him. It is definitely, he still doesn't have good fastball command, but if he can command that cutter, then there's a way for him to throw a strike that isn't super hittable when he needs a strike.
Yeah, and these days you have to have that, right? What about Nate Pearson? Tell Cubs fans what they can maybe dream on for Nate Pearson, who feels a lot like Kopech, actually, in terms of a cast off after a certain amount of failure with the organization with which he came up.
Yeah, I would be interested in really upping his slider usage, especially in counts where he needs a strike, because that is his best pitch by stuff, but it's also his best pitch by location, and he has some issues with location. I mean, he's just a big boy who throws really hard, and so he has some things in common with Kopech. I would say that I don't think his true talent command is as bad as Kopech's. I think it's a little better. And I think that after they traded Hunter Biggie in the Isak Paredes trade, they were just like, we're going to replace Hunter Biggie with another Biggie. And so you got this big boy Pearson out there. And one thing that's nice about him is he has these two breaking balls. I have a number of stuff plus that looks like the physical characteristics of pitches. Pearson has two breaking balls that are above 130 stuff plus. So Pearson has two breaking balls that are, as a pair, better than any other pitcher's breaking balls in baseball. So, you know, by this metric. So, so that is a really solid foundation. So even if he ups the slider usage to like 40% because he's using it in it to get strikes when he needs them, he still has a curveball that looks enough different and is also good enough in its own right that he can pitch backwards, where he's kind of like the slider is the fastball and the fastball and the curveball play off the slider. So I think that's a possible future for him. But also, because he's been injured so much, he hasn't had that much time on a major league mound. So the other thing you could just be betting on is that, you know, as if he stays healthy, and one of the things I like about the Cubs is they've invested in health. They have a director of fatigue and health in Dr. Mike Son, and, you know, they care about that aspect of it. If they think they can, they can keep him healthy, maybe put him on a five-day schedule. He does have the arsenal to be a starter. So however they keep him healthy and keep him on the mound, the more we're going to see what he can really do.
That's interesting. Talking to Eno Saris from The Athletic here on Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel. So Hunter Biggie, by the way, getting the call as the opener for the Tampa Bay Rays later on today. So
That's right.
Interesting to see that. All right, so you mentioned the Cubs infrastructure. Should fans still be bullish on the Cubs and their pitch lab and their ability to create relievers from other people's broken parts? They did it with Leiter and then traded him. Now they've got the kid Neely that they got, and they have Pearson. Do you consider the Cubs still to be capable of this thing that everybody seems to try to do?
I don't know. I'm not sure. They let Jeremiah Estrada go.
Yeah.
And that one just seems like just a kind of hole in the bottom of the boat that I can't explain. Also, just if you look at different, like at stuff metrics and bullpen metrics, their bullpen hasn't been good. Mm-hmm. And some of their acquisitions, like a Hector Maris and stuff, like I found a little bit underwhelming. So I'm going to give them sort of like a passing grade, but I don't know if it'd be a superlative grade in that department. There's definitely been advancements in their general organizational pitching development, and you've seen some of that bubbling up with especially with some of their starters. I'm generally happy that this organization has turned out, you know, Justin Steele, and I think Javier Saad's pretty good. I think Albert Alzolay, when he's healthy, can be a good reliever. So they're not bad. They're not, like, if we're sort of putting pitching development into tiers, they're not in the bottom tier. I don't even think they're below average, but I can't give them like a superlative grade, I don't think.
Yeah, boy, that's interesting. That's why it's hard, and it's 2 years in a row of overall the bullpen being an issue from team building, yeah, and from some development. I asked Carter Hawkins about Estrada, and he admitted that it was a miss, and that the Padres taught him a splitter, and that changed everything. Is it sometimes that simple? Just pairing the right breaking pitch, or, you know, or trying to teach a breaking pitch in that regard?
Yeah, but for me, it's like, A, could you have tried a splitter with him? You know, like, you can't just be like, oh, well, they tried a splitter, we couldn't have done that. Well, then you could have tried that.
Yeah.
The other thing is, he had really excellent stuff plus, and I immediately, as soon as the Padres picked him up on waivers, circled that transaction and pointed out that he was like top five, and specifically in like fastball stuff plus. I think he had a top five fastball that year in a tiny sample, but you're like, the stuff plus is meant to be important in tiny samples. It's just telling you it's really hard with a lot of ride. If I had been another front office, I would have jumped out of my chair to claim Jeremiah Estrada, because I would say, that's an amazing fastball. Whatever we need to do to make it work, let's go get him.
instead of making him available and having him snapped up by a rival organization. Yeah, that Padres mix in the bullpen right now. I went ahead and took a flyer as soon as they made that trade with the Marlins. I was like, you know, let me go ahead and bet them for the World Series just for fun, yeah. You know, just because that
it's starting to look like a team that could put it together. And I think that bullpen goes seven deep. And for all the people that say they paid dearly because they got Tanner Scott, who was the number one sort of rental reliever on the market, and they paid with an actual like starting pitcher who's pitched in the major leagues this year, Adam Mazur, and another prospect that used to be a top prospect, and Robbie Snelling, people think they overpaid. I want to point out that J.J. Cooper at Baseball America went through all the trade deadlines of the last, I don't know, 5-10 years. I don't know exactly the sample, but he found that of the players that were traded deadline, 40% never made the big leagues. Another 40% never put together one win of production. So basically the bust rate on prospects that are that are traded at the deadline is 80%. So
wow.
I tend to think that teams are, and we also saw this last deadline, not a single top 100 prospect being traded. It used to be, you know, the sale trade for Moncada,
Kopech.
That trade was like one of the last trades where a top five prospect, I think Moncada was on some list like number one.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last trade that I can remember where a top five prospect was traded, you know, between teams. And then it was like, well, now they're not trading top 10s. Now they're not trading. Now it's not even top 100s. I think as a team, if I see that, I was like, I don't even have to give up a top 100 prospect. One of my top three, you know, on average. Yeah, yeah. Let's go get better at the deadline.
80% bust rate. Goodness.
Yeah.
You know, and we love guys like A.J. Preller and Jerry DePoto. A video of Dayton Moore got passed around this past week that showed, it told a story about Chris Young gathering the baseball operations people last year at the deadline and saying, do you think we're good enough to win a World Series? And everybody said yes. And he said, okay, well then these prospects here, I don't want to hear any of you defending them. I don't want to hear any of you defending them anymore. It's like, we just, all they are is our assets for us to go win the World Series. And my God, I wish to hell Jed Hoyer had tried to make a deal for a hitter, whether it was a guy like Paredes or a guy like, you know, a slugger, if there was one there a month ago, 5 weeks ago, because I think one additional hitter of consequence has already made a difference in this lineup, and you could tell.
Yeah, yeah, timing is a funny thing, too. I mean, I think that we are a little bit too obsessed with the trade deadline. And in fact, I think the schedule, baseball is such a schedule-driven sport, that I think that the draft being where it is actually detrimental to trades happening. Because if you think about, you know, what you're doing as a front office, you're devoting resources to certain operations and certain things. And there are people that will work on the draft that also will work on looking at other teams' players or prospects if you're selling or buying. And so if you put the draft in July, right where it is, then the whole front office, almost all the front office is dedicated towards the draft, you know. And you do try to be like, okay, well, you two work on the trade deadline while we're working on the draft. And then you'll have to just like tell us what you learned when we get back, you know, back online, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's, you know, I think there would be earlier trades and there should be earlier trades because, you know, what you saw with Tanner Scott also was he was the last reliever traded. So at that point, you've got everybody who wanted a reliever at the table. And you're telling them, oh, well, the Red Sox aren't going to give me this guy and the Yankees are going to give me this guy. So you better give me that guy, you know? So, you know, I think, you know, doing earlier trades escapes some of that leverage and, you know, the drafting where it is a bit of a problem.
Well, I hope that that some GMs, you know, help to break that cycle and get aggressive early because the league could use it. A couple more things for, you know, Saras, appreciate the time on a Sunday morning. Garrett Crochet's power play was based on a belief that he can stay healthier as a starter than he can as a reliever. Is he right about that, logically, you think?
Yeah, sort of why I brought up Pearson. There is something, I mean, you know, like Mason Miller has, before he punched the table, was, you know, this big closer for the A's, and he did actually stay a little bit healthier because he's so dominant when he comes into relief, he can pitch 10 pitches and be done. So if you think about that, that's like so different than asking someone to go 80 or 100, right?
Yep.
But when they go 80 or 100, they aren't going max, you know? And one of the things that we know about stress on the arm in particular is the closer you throw to your maximum velocity, your personal maximum velocity, the more stress you put on your elbow. So that's why velo is not the same amount of stress for every arm. If I can throw 100 and I'm sitting 96, I'm actually, that's pretty healthy. But if I can only throw 97 and I'm sitting 96, that's not. So you can imagine how that would be very different in a bullpen setting versus a starter setting. So some people you might want to say, hey, let's put you in a starter situation where you're sitting further away from your maximum. You're putting less stress on your elbow, you know, and you get 4 days rest. And it's all sort of really regimented as opposed to I'm going to wake you up today and say, crap, I know you've pitched 2 days in a row, but we need you today, you know, which is the reliever's life. So
yeah.
I think that there's no like top down, like this guy would be healthier as a reliever. This guy would be healthier as a starter. It's a bit of a feeling out process in terms of how they throw, what they throw, and how they recover.
You talk to players a lot. I wonder what they think about this moment of player empowerment of Crochet affecting his own deadline like that. It's common. It's commonplace in the NBA and the NFL.
I think, you know, universally they'd be like, yeah, you know, get them. I mean, what it was just a sort of statement of fact, you know. He did probably affect what happened to him at the deadline, and that did not make his general manager happy. But you know, I do think just imagine you're at home, you've got a job, and you wake up and your job is like, well, we gave you to another company and they're in Seattle, so get packing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's pretty intense, and they have to uproot their families with kids and their lives, and so if they can have any say about it, I say, you know, get it.
All right. And then the last thing for you, how much of an issue these days are individual hitting coaches in terms of an organization being able to ask guys to do certain things? We talk so much two-strike approach in this town, and more so now that David Ross is gone and Craig Counsell is here, frankly, because Ross talked about it a lot and Craig doesn't talk about it that much. I wonder if orgs have the ability to get guys to change these days, or if it's more of what Dustin Kelly literally told me yesterday in the dugout, which is like, if a guy's got it, he's got it. And if he doesn't, then we need more guys who have it.
Yeah. I think it's particularly interesting with, you know, sending Christopher Morel out of town,
yep,
who is, you know, hits the ball super hard, but does strike out a fair amount. And you actually bring in Isak Paredes, who's in the bottom fifth percentile in terms of hitting the ball hard in the big leagues, and yet is a little bit more refined in terms of his walk and strikeout rates and his approach at the plate. I mean, there couldn't be a starker difference in sort of true talent or natural approach at the plate. How much can you shape that approach? I think the trade suggests that they think, you know, you can't shape Christopher Morel's approach that much. He's going to try and pull the ball. He's going to try and hit the crap out of the ball, and he's going to miss. You know, I think that trade was also about defense on some level. Like, if you look at publicly available numbers, Morel was below replacement because his defense was so bad. So, I would trade for Morel in a heartbeat because I love players that hit the ball super hard, and I like that. But yes, having these different voices in your head, I wrote this piece early in the year about the different voices in a player's head, and it's pretty intense because you'll have your college coach who still texts you sometimes. You'll have, you know, there'll be personal coaches that are just that are texting you trying to become your personal coach. You know, they aren't even actually your personal coach. And then there'll be your personal coach that you do go to all the time, the place that you train, the driveline guy or the tread guy, you know. And then you might even keep in touch with the roving instructor that was your minor league instructor if you're a young guy. And then you have your major league guy, and major leagues now usually have like two or three hitting coaches, you know? But I'll tell you this, the teams that are going to succeed at this think about this a lot, and they have different ways of doing it, but they think about this a lot. And one of the things they do is try to limit the amount of times that they touch that player from a coaching standpoint. So, you know, get an idea of who's talked to him and when they talk to him, so that they don't just overwhelm a guy. Try to sort of track who he has a good relationship with. Okay, we have three hitting coaches here, but he seems to really like that guy. Let's just let him talk to that guy, you know, and the other two just, you know, let him mind his own business. And then the last thing that they do is so there's this guy, Teacher Man, who like has taught Aaron Judge, but it's a very specific movement that he loves. And I'm not sure that it's good for every hitter. So in a lot of front offices, they sort of treat him with a little bit of, you know, they're a little bit worried, like, oh, God, this guy's working with Teacher Man. So one organization that I talked to said, brought Teacher Man in. They had their hitting coach take Teacher Man's course.
Oh,
they brought
God.
Teacher Man into spring training. And they said, they basically said to the player, look, we're cool with him. You know, look, he's right here. He's here at spring training. And then they just waited. And when that player hit an 0-for-20 stretch, the player came to their hitting coach and said, so what you got?
Oh, that's fascinating. That's fascinating. Yeah,
so
because
you have to sort of be aware of it and sort of sometimes incorporate stuff you don't want to and learn from the player and learn from the other coaches. But you have to just be steadfast that you think you have the right coaching. And you sort of sometimes have to sit there and wait for the player to come to you.
And you gotta show the player that you're as open-minded and curious and as willing as they are. That's fascinating.
Yeah, exactly.
I just found Teacher Man on Twitter. I have now followed Teacher Man.
No.
Should I unfollow?
Well, give it a ride. It'll be interesting. I just tell you, that guy thinks he's got it all figured out.
Okay.
And one of the things that I've figured out about baseball is that there is no way to figure it all out.
Yes.
And that if you hear somebody who thinks they have it all figured out, treat it with a lot of side eye.
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, run. All right. Now I've now unfollowed Teacher Man. That was quite a ride. It was quite a ride.
It would have been fun to see for a while. He's very disrespectful towards organizations and other players.
Oh, I got it. Interesting. Yeah, no, I'm good. I got enough drama in my life. I think I'm all right.
Right, yeah. That's good.
You know, how was the Art of Noise exhibit at the San Francisco MoMA? That thing looks awesome, by the way.
Oh, it was so cool. Not only was it all these posters from the 60s, and I brought my dad, who was a big Deadhead, and he's like sort of pointing out to each of the concerts he's been to, and we're talking about all these old bands. And then you kind of go and see all the old, like, cool ways that people produce sound. So, you know, the old boom boxes, but also the old, like, phonograms and all the different, like, ways we produce music. I have a jam box here at our house. It's like one of those little portable sound, like MP3 sound makers or whatever, you know, like one of those, you know. Apparently it's 14 years old and it was in the exhibit. And I was like, we still use that thing. Like, our Sonos craps out sometimes. And I'm like, okay, let's use the jam box.
Oh, that's awesome. All right.
So it was just really fun.
Might be worth the trip. Eno, thanks so much for the time, man. Enjoy your Sunday.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right. You got it. It's Eno Saris from The Athletic. We'll come back and I will pay off the Eric Davis tease before we get out of here on 670 The Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Ohtani gives it a ride. Deep right field, leaving no doubt. The Dodgers not going quietly. It's a one-run game.
Fastball, middle up. Heck yes, Shohei Ohtani. Swinging and missing on a cutter, low and in. Gets the mistake. And as soon as you hear it, no doubt.
Shohei Ohtani with that home run earlier in the week. He's been over 30 homers for a little while now. And then yesterday, Shohei stole his 30th bag of the season.
There goes Shohei. Takes off for second. Ball skips through. Stolen base number 30 for Shohei Ohtani. First Dodger with 30-30 since Matt Kemp in 2011.
108 games played, and Shohei Ohtani has reached 30-30. He's the third fastest man ever to do it, behind Alex Rodriguez with the Mariners in 1998, and my guy, Eric Davis, with the 1987 Cincinnati Reds. Eric Davis, that season, was the best ball player I've ever seen. Eric Davis, that year, he had 30 homers and 30 steals in 90 games played. He ended up with 37 homers and 50 stolen bases. He only played in 129 games, people. 129 games. He started 127 of them. He broke his ribs crashing into the wall at Wrigley on a flyout by Brian Dayette. So Eric Davis got hurt, and frankly, he was actually never quite the same. And there were lots of injuries. There was cancer. But my God, the skill set on that dude, absolutely outrageous. Maybe nobody ever like it. If he was healthy that whole year, he probably would have stolen 50 and hit 60 homers. Seriously. I mean, it's unbelievable what that guy did and what he was on his way to do. And I've never seen anybody better than that guy at the beginning of that season. By the way, this Tuesday, you can come join me and Danny Parkins from 2 to 6 at The Wall at the Marcus Gurney Cinema to register to win prizes and tickets and enjoy specials on food and beverages all day. Come on over there, because it's like a sports bar, but it's in the comfort of one of them fancy movie theaters at the Marcus Gurney Cinema. That's going to be awesome. And then at 8 p.m., enjoy the premiere of Hard Knocks there on The Wall's big screen. Admission is always free at The Wall. Thank you so much to our guests today. Derek Gould of the St. Louis Dispatch and Eno Saris from The Athletic. Thank you to Sean Sears, who did a great job producing the show, as he always does. Thank you to the associate producer, young Reuben Ford Spiegel, doing a fine job on the phones. Thank you to all
That's
the callers.
Me.
That is you, sir. That is you. Nailed it. Nailed it.
I did stuff.
Yeah, you did. Thank you to Spencer Schwellenbach for being a star player on Team of the Moment. Thank you to Bruce Levine calling in, prompted by Ron on the South Side. Thank you to all the callers. Folks, thank you to Frank for one of the great calls in hit and run history. I suspect you might hear that again tomorrow on Parkins and Spiegel. Rami Makhlouf is next right here on The Score. Then tonight it'll be Cubs and Cardinals at 5:35. Have a great Sunday, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to Hit and Run. I did stuff too, kid.
Yay! We did stuff together.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Ohtani gives it a ride. Deep right field. Leaving no doubt. The Dodgers not going quietly. It's a one-run game.
Shohei Ohtani swinging and missing on a cutter, low and in, gets the mistake. And as soon as you hear it, no doubt.
Shohei Ohtani with that home run earlier in the week. He's been over 30 homers for a little while now. And then yesterday, Shohei stole his 30th bag of the season.
There goes Shohei. Takes off for second. Ball skips through. Stolen base number 30 for Shohei Ohtani. First Dodger with 30 and 30 since Matt Kemp in 2011.
108 games played, and Shohei Ohtani has reached 30 and 30. He's the third fastest man ever to do it, behind Alex Rodriguez with the Mariners in 1998, and my guy, Eric Davis, with the 1987 Cincinnati Reds. Eric Davis, that season, was the best ball player I've ever seen. Eric Davis, that year, he had 30 homers and 30 steals in 90 games played. He ended up with 37 homers and 50 stolen bases. He only played in 129 games, people. 129 games. He started 127 of them. He broke his ribs crashing into the wall at Wrigley on a flyout by Brian Dayette. So Eric Davis got hurt, and frankly, he was actually never quite the same. And there were lots of injuries. There was cancer. But my God, the skill set on that dude, absolutely outrageous. Maybe nobody ever like it. If he was healthy that whole year, he probably would have stolen 50 and hit 60 homers. Seriously. I mean, it's unbelievable what that guy did and what he was on his way to do. And I've never seen anybody better than that guy at the beginning of that season. By the way, this Tuesday, you can come join me and Danny Parkins from 2 to 6 at The Wall at the Marcus Gurney Cinema to register to win prizes and tickets and enjoy specials on food and beverages all day. Come on over there, because it's like a sports bar, but it's in the comfort of one of them fancy movie theaters at the Marcus Gurney Cinema. That's going to be awesome. And then at 8 p.m., enjoy the premiere of Hard Knocks there on The Wall's big screen. Admission is always free at The Wall. Thank you so much to our guests today. Derek Gould of the St. Louis Dispatch and Eno Saris from The Athletic. Thank you to Sean Sears, who did a great job producing the show, as he always does. Thank you to the associate producer, young Reuben Ford Spiegel, doing a fine job on the phones. Thank you to all
That's
the callers.
Me.
That is you, sir. That is you. Nailed it. Nailed it.
I did stuff.
Yeah, you did. Thank you to Spencer Schwellenbach for being a star player on Team of the Moment. Thank you to Bruce Levine calling in, prompted by Ron on the South Side. Thank you to all the callers. Folks, thank you to Frank for one of the great calls in hit-and-run history. I suspect you might hear that again tomorrow on Parkins and Spiegel. Rami Makhlouf is next right here on The Score. Then tonight it'll be Cubs and Cardinals at 5:35. Have a great Sunday, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to Hit and Run. I did stuff too, kid.
Yay! We did stuff together.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.